Couple of quick agenda checks. If anybody's here for House Bill 3371, we will not be working on that bill today. The chair is will not be here this morning. We'll see if 3371 will come back on the schedule, but we will not be working on that one today. And then my intent for the rest of this morning is to take the bills in the following order, starting out with Senate Bill 248, House Bill 2375, House Bill 2114, and House Bill 3344, if there's anyone who comes in and wishes to present any more information on House Bill 3344. With that in mind, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 248. And Elizabeth, what are we doing?
All right. As chairman and members of the committee, this is Martin Mahar. And with Senate Bill 248, I'll just give you a quick overview. And this was done by an interim study that was having the goal of reorganizing the farm use statutes, but not changing the existing law significantly. They just wanted to make it more accessible for people. And this work group, some of the members will come in and speak to the bill, but it was comprised of a very diverse group, and there was really no major policy changes. There's just one minor change in the abatement section, and that's section 24, which is just a change to the disqualification penalties. Under current law, you have interest is added to taxes that shall be paid once farmland is disqualified, but this measure eliminates that interest that has to be paid on those penalty taxes if the farmland is disqualified. But the majority of the bill, I know it's quite lengthy, but it really is just making minor changes and clarifying the language, then updating sections with appropriate letters. It's putting subcategories. It makes it a lot easier to read. I know I've used this bill ever since it came out, just trying to understand the farm statutes. It's just easier to use. Another thing that was done in one of the amendments, I think it's the dash 4, just so you know, the A4. Has the sum of the dash A3 and the dash A2. So you really just can look at the A4 if you want for all the different amendments that are made since it passed the Senate. And they're changing the amount of time that the county assessor's office has to send a written disqualification notice from 15 to 30 days. And they're changing the application deadline for forest land designation from January 1st to August 15th, and this just allows counties more time to get out and actually inspect the forest land. So the revenue impact is very minimal just due to that interest change, that there would be a slight reduction in just those local property tax revenues due to that interest charge elimination on the disqualified farm owners.
Okay, we'll take any questions of Elizabeth? Okay, on the witness list, Gary Wright from Department of Revenue. Oh, sure, why not? John Schellenberg, Tom Linares. And Kumaya.
Good morning. Representative Rasmussen, and I'm Gary Wright, Department of Revenue, and I'm here to represent the bill. On my left, your right here is Don Schellenberg with Oregon Farm Bureau. On my right, your left is Tom Linares, representing the Assessors Association. Let me just start from the beginning. We saw the need to draft this bill in 1997, and actually many years prior to that, if you consider that these farm use laws have been in existence since the early 1960s, they have consistently been changed every legislative session since then, and there's been no organization or structure for them. And they're very complex, yet they're very good. Over time, they've been developed with no organization. And so the main idea here is that we organize them so that they can be much more easily administered and that farmers get benefits and actually reduce appeals because interpretation is improved. So that's really the only intent. There's no change, substantive change anyway, to existing laws, no policy changes. You'll have a handout that I've presented this morning. So I thought I'd just briefly go over that handout.
It would look like this.
Yes, it would look like this.
Great.
If you'll turn to the second page, it starts the structure of this bill. It's right there. And you'll notice that it's now been organized. The very first portion is a statement of legislative intent, which is a policy statement, which has been in statutes. You can see there's an old section and a new section. And under the old section, that's where these laws originated. And under, of course, the new section, then you'll see that the new section is in sequential order. And it goes through 45 sections. If you follow the structure, you'll see that it's been organized into qualifications and then valuation and then disqualification on the first page. And on the second page, we get into farm home sites and then additional tax procedures. And then the third page is some conforming amendments. So you can see it's rather organized. And just at a glance, if you take a look at the old section, you can see we're like on page one, qualifications, all the different laws where you'd find qualifications. Well, now you find them in sections 2 to 4. And that's the way that it goes. If you get into page 2, which is on the next page, you can see if you look down into where you have additional taxes, that there's quite a few areas when you get into disqualifying where they're just all over the statutes everywhere. So, and then again, you can see under the new section, they've all been organized. So that's, in a nutshell, of what we're accomplishing here. I'd like to just give you a little history of what we did in order to reach this point so that you'll understand that this has been well thought out. Back in December of 1997, the department, recognizing the need for this, called a meeting, and Don Schellenberg and Tom Linares, who represent Farm Bureau and the Oregon Associated Assessors, were invited to the Department of Revenue, and we discussed it as to could this, you know, was there an interest in accomplishing this? And it was decided that yes, there was. And so in February of 1998, we then formed what we call a working group. And that's on your next page following the structure. You have this working group. And so this working group was comprised of 3 farmers who represented the farm community, and Don Schellenberg was the Oregon Farm Bureau, and Tom Linares. You can see that there's Roger Ross, and then Dexter Johnson was involved all the way through the process and ended up drafting this bill. So it was brought into legislative council from the onset, and so all the laws have been drafted under his direction. And then on the right-hand side, you can see there's more county involvement with Bart Dickerson and Dick Stradley as another assessor, Ron Eber from Land Conservation and Development, Jim Johnson, Department of Agriculture, Barbara Hansen was managing the project representing Department of Revenue, myself, and then Lent Cannon. with Oregon Forest Industries Council. And the reason we had Glen Cannon in there is some crossover into the forest statutes necessary because many farms have forest land on them, and you have a combination of farm and forest, and when you get into disqualification, the procedures are the same, and they can change from one special assessment to another. So we made some minor changes in that area. and also home sites was in another statute outside of the forest land statutes. So basically that's the working group. And this working group then produced the structure that you've just seen, this structure here. And by June of 1998, then the review group, which is on the other side, on the very back, review group reviewed the structure and also reviewed the proposed bill. And you can see that that's comprised of representatives in the farming community, different organizations such as nurserymen and the Wheat League Growers and Cattlemen's Association. We tried to involve all the major interest holders in this. And so that was accomplished by August of 98. We made suggested changes that were necessary, mm-hmm. and by November, December of 98, within the bill was ready. We made one last review of the bill in December of this last year. So, anyway, I guess I'd just like to say that the bill's carefully been drafted and major interest holders have been identified, and we ask for a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. It's very clear the amount of time and energy that a number of people put into this particular section, and very much appreciate your paying attention on this kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Hope that it does indeed get us to a place of clarity.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don Schoenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I'd like to begin by complimenting Mr. Wright, the Department of Revenue, for starting this process and for the very good work that Mr. Wright did. He was really the person who managed this thing in spite of whatever else he said and did an excellent job. This was a very good process, not without a lot of discussion, certainly, but one of the things that we agreed to when we started was that there would be no policy changes. And so when we first sat down, we just started working our way through all these different statutes, and we kept coming up with policy discussions. And, this really ought to be changed, you know. And, I don't think we like that too much. And you'd have this kind of bantering back and forth, and finally somebody would say, well, the agreement here was we aren't going to do any policy change. Is this a policy change? Yes. Nope. It's off the table then. And we held to that. We stayed with that throughout. Shortly after we were basically done with the bill, I had one of my Farm Bureau members come to the office late one evening, and he says, I've really got some concerns about this bill. I'm just afraid you're changing stuff or you're not catching stuff, and one particular thing he had in mind. And I said, well, let me check. And so I went right to the bill and went to the structure, and you could find it, you know, just like that, showing right where it was. And so that's just a demonstration of what it is we were trying to accomplish. We believe we have accomplished that. There are a couple of the Dash 4 amendments Elizabeth mentioned, and Gary and Tom will maybe talk about those. Every amendment that we've made since we came into this process has just been minor, truly housekeeping changes, technical corrections that need to be made to make the bill work. Again, no policy changes. Just thank you for the opportunity to be here today to express our support for the bill and ask your passage of Senate Bill 248.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Linhares, and I represent the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. I'd sort of like to echo Don's comments regarding complimenting the Department of Revenue, Barbara Hansen and Jim Maneri for allowing the project to continue, and for Gary Wright for doing all the grunt work in putting the meetings together and providing information for the working group to deal with. He really did do a remarkable job, and I thank Gary for that. As Don mentioned, we established early on that we weren't going to change any policy. In fact, there were several times when the assessors had suggested a change that would actually benefit the farmers. And the three farmers sitting on the other side of the table would say, nope, that changes policy, can't do that. And we went, okay. So it really was a good exercise. And throughout the legislative session, we've had people say, well, we've got this issue we need to deal with. Can we use 248 and amend it? And we said, nope, hands off. We're not going to, you know, touch it. So despite the length of the bill, it really is a fairly clean, I hate to use the word housekeeping, because as you can see on the front of Gary's handout, there are some substantive changes that were required to be made in drafting the bill. But for the most part, it simply cleans things up. I mean, I've dealt with these statutes for 12 years. I think I know them about as well as anybody. And there were things that I knew were in statute. I just couldn't find them. I mean, I'd be fumbling through the law book at the counter talking to a taxpayer saying, well, you've got to do this. But, you know, just a minute, I'll find it. And it would take me a long time to find the darn thing just because the statutes were so helter-skelter. With this bill, it will make it a lot easier to do that, and I won't look like such a dummy at the counter when I'm talking with farmers and property owners on how to deal with these complex issues. So I'm certainly willing to answer any questions about the substantive changes, the seven substantive changes that Gary has brought to your attention, or any of the other technical amendments or changes that are being made. One thing Don forgot to mention, the Farm Bureau member that came to his office late at night, the fellow was blind, and he was having somebody read the bill to him. He actually found something that we had missed. There was a bunch of obsolete references to interest calculations. In certain cases in the past, when we calculated back taxes, sometimes there was interest charge. They had changed that back in, 93, Don? 91 or 93? They had changed the main statute. But there's a bunch of other statutes where they had referenced delinquent taxes and interest. And we had failed back in 91 or 93 to take out the and interest words from a lot of these other statutes. He found them. So one of the things we did late in the process is we went back through the whole bill and we removed all of those references. So it's just the kind of thing that you can miss when you got such a complex set of statutes. And hopefully this will clean that up in the future.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Sounds like we don't even dare.
Well, I just got to talk. Just explain something to me. We just heard about the deletion of all interest from this bill. I think that explains why it's so dry. It could have been a good bill, but they took out all the interest.
Thank you, Representative.
Well, Madam Chair, since there are no questions, I'm going to make the assumption then that everybody has read the bill, and that's the reason there are no questions. We certainly appreciate your long nights working through this bill.
I just really wanted to express, and it's very clear that a number of people, and especially Mr. Wright, has put in a great deal of energy and effort into making the law accessible to everyone. And anytime anyone puts that energy into it, I just really want to lift you up and say thank you. It's an interesting process to get into and to keep it accessible to non-lawyers among us. I think it's a good thing. I very much appreciate that work. We have this scheduled for a public hearing only. We will come back and I'm sure move into a fairly efficient work session, having memorized the new improved bill. Before I close the public hearing, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 248?
Madam Chair, I still have a question.
Great. from Representative Merkley.
I received a letter that, as far as I can tell, doesn't pertain to this bill, but it claims to, and so I just want to clarify it. It notes as lifelong farmers in Oregon, we believe SB 248 is not right or fair. We believe the gas pipeline should follow roads and not cut through fields or forests, so on and so forth. Does this have anything to do with anything that's been changed in this legislation?
Any pipelines in this bill?
Not to my knowledge. This bill doesn't get into gas lines, Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Close the public hearing. Representative Bill 248. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to open a hearing on House Bill 2375. And as always, Elizabeth.
So House Bill 2375, just so you know, this dash one amendment is deleting the current bill, or the majority of it. And then, so this dash one amendment is your bill. And what it's doing is it cancels the additional tax resulting from the following circumstances. If there's been disqualification of specially assessed forest land, if the sale or transfer of the property is to a federal, state, and local government agency. So this is what all of this bill is directed around, is are these transfers or sales of property to federal, state, and local government agencies. So in addition, if there's been a declassification of forest land as a result of the forest land being acquired by the local by a local government agency, then a lien and the taxes and interest shall not attach in that particular circumstance. And also, if there is disqualification of land that is designated as forest land as a result of an application being filed from the forest land being acquired by that government agency, then there will also be a cancellation of the additional tax and a lien of the taxes and interest shall not attach. So this measure has taken effect January 1st of 2000. From this bill, it's really, you know, it's very hard to actually determine the number of circumstances and situations in which you would have a forest land owner who would sell or transfer their property to a tax exempt entity, and it's very small each year, so this is not a large amount of taxes that would actually be reducing local revenues. So it'll be very minor change to local revenue statewide.
Thank you. Any questions of Elizabeth?
Madam Chair, did we have a dash one amendment in our file already?
It was handed out the last time. We didn't really hear this bill that day, but was handed out. No.
I don't have any.
No.
Do you have the dash three amendments? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's the dash three.
Okay.
Is the dash three we're talking about?
Yeah, dash three.
All right.
Just change this to dash three.
We're all right.
Yeah. Mr. John Foster.
Mm-hmm.
So I note you are one of the sponsors, or you went through Roger Beyer to on this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Foster. I live near Estacada, Oregon. I'm a tree farmer there. I had asked Roger Beyer to see if we couldn't draft some type of bill to correct what I feel is an inequity and an inequity, and I'll explain what that is here, but that's how it was introduced with my name on it. I didn't expect my name to be on the bill. I don't know how many times it's been scheduled and not been heard. And
no.
In quite a time. Anyway, I'm the president of the Clackamas County Farm Forestry Association. It has about 350 members, and it's a chapter of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And I want to make clear that if this bill passes, it doesn't affect at time, I don't have any pending sales or anything like this. It was just what I felt was an inequity situation here. Most forest landowners pay, and I won't go into great depths on this, but they're taxed on their land on its ability to produce productivity of the trees and the market value of the timber when they sell it. Now, in some places, this may be the same as the true market value. In some cases, it's not, especially if you're a small woodland owner, you're in closer. When you sell to an entity that is tax exempt, then we need to pay the 5-year rollback the day before or the day of the closing. Reason being that they don't want that to be carried forward. And the tax rollback is the difference between the assessed value on that forest land or the true market value. Some cases it's quite a bit, and some cases it's not. This Base 3 amendment, it narrows the scope on this down to just forest land that's transferred to a government entity. Reason being that somebody could set up a non-profit or something else, and there might be possible abuse of what we had in mind, and that wasn't our intent. It was, to give you a few examples, like Highway 20, where they relocated between Corvallis and Newport. Then when you sell that, when they come in and buy the land to put the highway through, then you pay the rollback on the taxes. And our intent was to keep it in forest land, and it wasn't even necessarily our intent to sell the land. You do. Another good example would be the Columbia Gorge Scenic Area. It was passed with all good intentions, but some small woodland owners were in there to grow timber to sell on the market. And their larger timber owners could do some land exchanges. Smaller timber owners were, if they wanted to stay in the timber business, probably had to sell out their property to the government and then buy a different one. Even if you donated some land to a fire station or something, you would still need to pay that 5-year rollback, or city of Salem for a park, if you happen to be close here. Those would be a few of the examples where it would take effect. We did have farmland in there when we started, and some research, and it's kind of complicated, is the testimony on the last bill. It's so controverted, and we looked at something took place last session, and we couldn't figure out what it was. It referred to a bunch of chapters, and tried to dig it out, and it just didn't work. So we eliminated it right down to forest land and government entities. With your handout, I also have a report from it was made by Tom Linhares, which is here today, and a couple other county assessors, and it just the report explains the issue there. And I want to thank, we have the support of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I've talked to OFIC, there's no problem there. Department of Forestry doesn't seem to have a problem. Department of Revenue indicated they don't have a big concern. And I talked to the assessors, and there doesn't seem to be a big concern on what we have here. I think if you do feel like I do, that it's a fairness issue, that if I sold to Representative Welsh and he changed the use of the land, he would have to pay the rollback. But if I sell to the state or sell to a government entity, I have to pay before they sell. And it may not have been my intent to change the use of this land. So I believe it's just a fairness issue, and I'd like your support of the Base 3 amendments and the support of the bill. And I thank you very much. Thank you. If there's any questions?
Yeah, any questions?
Great. Thank you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And your patience with a somewhat chaotic legislative schedule.
I understand.
Many people in the room here can tell you that the schedule builds often. And
well, part of that scheduling problem was my fault, too, because I kept going back and trying, as you see, it's Base 3 amendment. The First Amendment didn't work. It took several times to get it out there where I thought I could take care of the concerns.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2375? Okay, again, this has been scheduled for public hearing only, and imagine that the conversations with the chair will determine where we go with it next. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2375. And we will open a hearing on House Bill 2114.
I'm going to take advantage of this moment to again say that if anyone's coming late, we will not be working on House Bill 3371 this morning. And Dick, if you want to give us the overview?
Yes, House Bill decades legislative revenue. House Bill 2114 deals with funding some programs in the Department of Forestry. The first one deals with the service foresters who provide sort of consultation and services to small, basically non-industrial private forest landowners. Traditionally, general funded, these services have been provided in the past and funded through the general fund. This provides for a separate funding mechanism for those services, which is part of the Forest Product Harvest Tax. I think we went through that before. And this would add 17 cents per thousand board feet. And that money would be dedicated to the Department of Forestry for funding the Forest Service Program. The tax is at the bottom of page 1 in new subsection 4 at 17 cents. And as you see at the top of the next page, it may be extended only for assistance to non-industrial private forest landowners. And the new section 5 on page 3, subsection 5 in section 4, again repeats that those monies essentially are for that purpose only. The next change is on page 4, in section 6, lines 31 and 32, and that's the deletion of a sunset date. And what that section has to do is funding the tax credit for reforestation of underproductive forest land and administration of the Western Oregon Small Tract Option Tax. Those programs, again, are administered by the Department of Forestry. And this pays for a portion, at least, of the cost of administering those programs through transferring money out of the Western Oregon timber tax account. So it's severance taxes that are paid by people harvesting timber in Western Oregon to transfer that money into the general fund for or to the Department of Forestry. And the last change in or the last part is on page 5, which says it's effective July 1 in 1999. I should go back and point out that the forest product harvest tax of 17 cents is not a permanent tax. It's instituted just for 2 years, two calendar years, 2000 and 2001.
Any questions from Mr. Yates? We have three people sign up to testify. You all can come up together or in as you wish. Wallace Rutledge, Barry Lamowers, and Gil Rydell. All right.
We have people.
Why don't we begin with Wallace Rutledge, please?
Thank you. And for the record, my name is Wallace Rutledge, and I'm the Director of Forestry Assistance with the Oregon Department of Forestry. Since Dick is explaining what the bill does, I'll skip through that on my testimony and talk a little bit about the funding for assistance to non-industrial private forest landowners. There are approximately 166,000 non-industrial private forest landowners who own about 4.5 million acres of forest land that contain important habitat for salmon and fish and other wildlife species. These landowners own about 16% of the private, 16% of the commercial forest land within the state, and they currently harvest about 16% of the timber volume. These forest lands are an important link in the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, and experience has shown us that these landowners will improve the management of their lands with proper motivation and knowledge and assistance. The Forestry Assistance Program has been around for quite some time, but back in 1991, 93, 95 biennials, the budget was reduced by about 50%. All of the general fund basically was taken away from that support. And then additional cuts in the federal funding and so forth really made it almost impossible for the department to continue this assistance that's needed to address the forest health issues, such as the preservation and restoration of salmon habitat, the conversion of the underproducing forest lands in Oregon, the reduction of fuel loads that's caused by insect and disease damage, and prevention of future insect and disease damage to the forest lands on these small woodlots. But in 1997-99 biennial, there was almost $500,000 that was generated from a temporary increase in harvest tax to support the Oregon plan for salmon and healthy watersheds that was matched by the general fund, and that enabled the service forces then to go back to work and work with these individual landowners to help them meet their management objectives while improving water quality and salmon habitat throughout the entire watershed and across all of the ownership boundaries. This technical assistance includes fish habitat enhancement, soil water protection, and also the basic forest management, including management planning for their lands, reforestation, insect and disease prevention, riparian and wetland protection and enhancement, and wildlife habitat enhancement. This funding was temporary, and long-term funding was needed to address the issue in the 99-1 session. Well, here we are, and we're still not sure we have a good long-term funding. But in 1996, ODF formed a forestry assistance task force to identify the needs of these non-industrial private forest landowners, who should provide those needs, and then what ODF's role was in providing those needs, and then how should those needs be paid for through the Department of Forestry. This task force has been going on for 2 years and couldn't come to any agreement on long-term funding. And so as a fallback, they recommended a temporary increase in the harvest tax and agreed that they were going to continue to work on this long-term funding situation and hope to come back at the next session with a long-term funding solution. I'd like to point out just a little bit about what the task force is. If you turn in your written comments there on attachment one, this task force actually was made up of a diverse interest group of people that were interested in trying to provide the assistance that was needed to help small woodland owners do a better job of managing their lands. That includes members from Oregon Small Woodland Association, other non-industrial private landowners that really weren't represented by anyone, OSU, Extension Forestry, private consultants, U.S. Forest Service, the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, Association of Conservation Districts, OFIC, and so forth. Some of a summary of the work is there, and I won't go through all of them, just kind of highlight a few. The task force really realized that there needs to be an array of services provided by both the public and the private sector to these small woodland owners to help them meet their needs. And one of the things that we agreed is to try and figure out a way to encourage the private sector to do more of this, realizing that even if there was more done by the private sector, there's still so much to be done that everybody needs to play a role in this. The task force actually recommended a budget to pay for the minimum services that they identified that was needed, and that budget was somewhat larger than the budget that was put forward. There was actually 37 potential funding sources that were identified, but again, we couldn't come to any agreement on which ones we could use for the long term, and so they fell back to short-term funding of the harvest tax. And another thing I'd like to point out that the service forces actually are starting to meet with watershed councils and landowners and help with the Oregon plan and Oregon Salmon and Healthy Watershed. So far to date, during this last couple of years, we've had over 300 projects in progress on the ground, working with landowners and watershed councils. Also, the Forest Assistance Program is working with the Governor's Office and the federal government to develop and implement the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, CRAP, that you might have heard about. This is where the state of Oregon has entered into an agreement with the federal government to get funds to enhance riparian areas, primarily on farmland. As a partner to this, the federal government actually administers the program. They provide the technical responsibility and assistance to develop the conservation plans, but ODS service forestry actually provide the expertise and have the responsibility for developing the riparian tree planting projects that go into these projects. So that's a little bit about what the service forestry do and what this harvest tax would fund. The Western Oregon Small Tract Offshore Tax has been around since 1961 to provide an alternative forest land property tax for woodland owners in Western Oregon. This tax is based on the productivity of the land, and the harvest of timber actually is exempt from the privilege tax, but in return, the landowners pay 100% of their taxes on an annual basis. This provides an incentive then for those small woodland owners to do better management because they know that they're paying on the productivity of the land and not on the actual products that are harvested from the land. There's approximately 2,800 woodland owners in this program, and actually, the Department of Forestry administers this program, whereas in most cases the counties administer tax programs. And so, as the department administers this program, there are certain requirements that are met that need to be met. The landowner has to have a management plan. The landowner has to be managing for timber purposes as well as the other resources, or they're not eligible and they get declassified out of this program. So the Department of Forestry service forces go out and make sure that those management requirements are met and help those landowners develop project plans if they need to, or treatment plans to bring their land in compliance with the management requirements of that program. Now, for the first 30 years of its existence, the Woolstock was funded out of the general fund. But in 1991, due to the pressures from the general fund, from Major Five and so forth, the funding was shifted over to the Western Oregon Timber Tax Account, and it was tied to sunset at the end of the biennial. In 93 and 95, this sunset funding was continued, and is still being continued on a two-year basis. Part of the rationale, actually, for funding it from that program was that the department is administering this program for what otherwise the counties might be doing, and so therefore it was only fair to take some funding out of that to administer this program. This program also is a property tax program, and that's another rationale for taking that funds out of that fund to administer the program. There is a attachment 2 here that gives a brief summary of the changes that were actually have been implemented in Woolstock, and I won't go over those right now, but if you have some questions, I'd be glad to try and answer those. Reforestation tax credit was created in 1979 and has been subsequently amended 5 times to provide incentives to private forest landowners to actually invest in converting some of these underproducing lands to healthy productive forests. And attachment 3 highlights some amendments that have been imposed on that tax program. And one of the things that you will note that it does sunset in the year 2001. Now, the lands that are eligible for this credit are generally those poorly stocked lands that are covered with brush and grass and Scotch broom and so forth that's resulted from fire or insect disease, or lands that were converted to pasture land a long time ago, and now landowners need to convert those back to the timber. If these lands actually have a manageable stand on them and are harvested, they are, of course, are required to be reforested by law, and therefore those lands are not eligible for this tax credit program. The way this tax credit works is the landowner actually plants the trees and he can claim then 15% or one half of that tax credit in that year. Then 2 years go by and the landowner then can claim the other 15% of that tax credit plus the amount of money that might have taken to maintain that stand over those 2 years. Upon the certification by the service forestry that those trees are still there and there's still a healthy productive forest on its way. So in summary, House Bill 2114 will provide critical funding to allow the Department of Forestry to continue the current service level of assistance to non-industrial private forest landowners in support of the Oregon Plan and healthy watersheds. And it will continue the administration of Woolstock and the reforestation tax credit. There is an attachment to your handout that talks about all the tax programs and so forth, and you've probably gotten into those before, so I won't go into them, but it shows the effects of some of the increases in this particular bill. Now, after this bill was drafted last fall, a revised harvest projection would result in harvest tax rate changing from 17 cents down to 15 cents possibly. That rate may change again if the forecast changes, and that could happen as this bill, I think, is subsequently going to be referred to Ways and Means. So I thank you for your time and your consideration. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Rutledge. Are there any questions? Representative.
I mean, Chair.
Works for me.
Chair. Not Speaker. I was talking to you.
All right, was that a motion?
Sorry about that. We are adding 17 cents again to all harvested timber on all land, forest land.
Representative Welsh, yes, that's correct.
Would that mean state lands and federal lands too?
Yes, that's all lands.
Any further questions?
I think it's adding or continuing the tax. Isn't the sunset, isn't that we're doing?
We've got two taxes, two different sources of revenue.
Right.
One is the Western Oregon
severance
tax.
Right.
But there's a new tax here, or a new rate.
A new rate.
That applies to timber harvested on both public and private land throughout the state. The existing rate is about $2 and something. This would add 17
cents. Okay. Oh, it is. Okay. We'll follow up on that then. As to that rate, Mr. Rutledge, your testimony, I think, at the tail end there was that your written testimony after the bill was drafted, a revised harvest projection would result in the harvest tax rate changing from 17 to 15. Is there an amendment or a proposed amendment to do that, or...
Representative Chatterley, Madam Chair, there is a proposed amendment here. We would assume that that might be happening in Ways and Means. This is one of a couple of bills that goes to Ways and Means, I believe. And at that time, when they look at the final harvest, they may adjust several different rates. And if you look at the last page of this handout here, it has a... On the far right-hand corner, it has a list of the harvest tax. And it shows the harvest tax for research at 67 cents, Forest Land Protection Fund at 50 cents, the Forest Practices Act at $1.08, and the Oregon Forest Institute at 79 cents, and then the Forest Assistance at 15 cents. Now, if you look... two columns to your left, you'll see what the taxes were or are now during this current biennial. And that'll give you some comparison.
Do I understand the list?
History, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Except it doesn't go to Ways and Means, as I understand this.
If I may.
Sure.
It will go to Ways and Means. I think the intended timing is that if it gets through the revenue committees on both sides, it'll go to Ways and Means.
Okay.
So from here, it goes to the floor, to the Senate, to the revenue committee on the Senate, Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank
That's
you.
My expectation.
Thank you. Representative
Wilson. The 17 cents that we're talking about here will be assessed to all landowners. And then I look at over here on the task force summary. Everybody seems to agree that service forestry programs are needed. But in the past, we have used certain amount of general fund dollars to fund that also, haven't we?
Representative Welch and Madam Chair, yes, in the early 90s, most of that funding came from general fund. because of Measure 5 and the restrictions on the use of general funds, all those funds went away. And then they came back with a harvest tax match last biennial. And what this does is continue that funding mechanism that was instituted last session. And the task force recognizes that this is a short-term funding only until we can agree upon a long-term funding to provide this assistance.
What is your thought about long-term funding there? Do you think there's a possibility? Once we put something like this in place, it's sometimes rather difficult to change or even get to the point in time when we will discuss long-term funding.
Representative Wells, Madam Chair, that sometimes happens. The Department of Forestry is committed to continue this task force. The members on the task force are committed and strongly believe that they can come up with an agreement to fund this program on a long-term basis that will be a lot more accessible for everyone. Also, the department is committed to look at all of our programs that are currently funded out of Harvest Act and see if there is a different way of funding those all of those programs, not just this one program.
Would you explain again what you intend primarily to do with those dollars? Is it strictly service? It just says up here that we're going to provide assistance to non-industrial private landowners. But yet we're taxing everyone on this process for a public purpose. What I'm trying to differentiate here is good policy. And we're laying 17 cents per thousand board feet on harvested forest products here on those who are industrial landowners, and we also are going to provide benefits. Supposedly, we have been told they're benefits for the state of Oregon on watershed programs for our salmon plan that we have bought into and supported through general fund dollars. What I want to differentiate here is policy. Should we be assessing this tax on just those who are harvesting, or should we go back to the general fund and talk about it?
Representative Welch and Madam Chair, that's a very good question, and actually the committee has wrestled with that question. We don't have a good answer, and that's why we came back with this short-term funding. We realize that all of the landowners benefit from this program because these lands that the small wooden owners are highly visible, they are in critical areas on salmon habitat, streams, and wildlife and so forth. And therefore, not only do they benefit somewhat, but the state benefits greatly. The industry benefits because they are part of the whole picture. These landowners do not have the benefit of resources for expertise and knowing how to do the things that the industry does. And so there's a benefit here from all of these people that's involved, and that's why they're interested in trying to figure out a way to provide the assistance for them.
Well, Representative Welch, I want to do a quick time check here. We have a 10 o'clock session and about four more witnesses.
Okay.
If you want to continue.
We're not going to move this today.
We're not going to move this today.
I will provide questions again to the department.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you for your patience here. Terry Lammers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Terry Lammers. I'm with the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. We represent the family forest landowners in the state, and there's over 160,000 of us. And I'm also a family forest landowner myself in Fulton County. We support House Bill 2114. We think that there may be differences of opinion on the funding mechanism of the tax, but we believe strongly in the underlying programs, and a long-term solution does need to be worked out that will continue these programs. For example, WOSTOP's been in effect since 1961 to suddenly not fund the program and to leave these people in never-ever land of sorts would be hard to justify, in my opinion. Also like to make a case for a long-term steady policy regarding taxes on forest land. I like to talk about compare forest land investments to zero coupon bonds. A zero coupon bond is a bond where you buy, receive no interest until you, it's called at the end of the, say, 30, 40, 50 year period. Well, that's very similar to forest land. We make the investment up front, get no revenue for 30, 40, 50, and on the east side, in some cases, over 100 years. How many people would make that investment, knowing that that investment could be burnt, could be devastated by disease, insects, initiatives, or public policy? For example, we're extremely concerned about the interpretation that the privilege tax is not a land tax. OSLA, the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, believes this directly contradicts Oregon Revised Statutes 321.259 through 321.272, which clearly states that the privilege tax is a land tax. And this may be a minor area of concern for many people, but when you take a look at that additional land tax in a 50-year rotation, and that's paid up front, it makes a huge difference in the feasibility of making that investment, and therefore can provide a huge disincentive for that investment. And I agree with Representative Welsh about the funding concerns. We do need to find a long-term solution, and the interim task force will hopefully come to some agreement on that. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Go right down.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gil Verdell, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm just going to address the narrow point of removal of the sunset for funding administration of the Western Oregon Small Tract Option Tax and the Reforestation Tax Credit programs. You've got my single sheet of points, and I've noticed from the testimony that preceded this, there really isn't any disagreement. I believe there's an understanding that a long-term solution needs to be found. My concern is the same as Representative Welsh's, that once you put a funding source in permanent statutory language, it's more difficult to change. So my request is simple, that the sunset not be removed, and it be used as a means to continue the emphasis and search for a long-term solution to these funds, to the funding these programs. So I'd ask that the two-year sunset be back in place.
Do you have any questions? Thank you for your patience and for coming in this morning. Ray Wilkerson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'd like to speak generally in support of this bill, but we do have a couple of reservations, or at least observations about it, that kind of echo some of the things you've already heard. And for some reason that's not clear to me, this bill, as you know now know, does deal with two completely or very distinct subject areas, so taking them one at a time. This would add a new new component to the harvest tax in a way that's for a program that's not traditionally been funded through the harvest tax. Temporarily last biennium through a grant to the Oregon Watershed Improvement Grant Fund, the Salmon Plan Fund harvest tax, because there was harvest tax revenues in the salmon plan. There was an indirect use of the harvest tax for this purpose last biennium, but previous to that, this tax had never been used for this purpose. I guess the reservation generally we'd like to express is we have considerable concerns about the unfettered growth of this tax, the harvest tax. In 1980, the overall rate was 29 cents a thousand. If the bills that are currently before this legislature are enacted into law, the rate will exceed $3 a thousand. That amounts to over $25 million a biennium, so this is not a small tax anymore. And what we're really concerned about is it's becoming kind of a catch-all. It's the interest, the administration, the collection mechanism are in place. It's a relatively easy tax to collect and administer and distribute. So it's a tempting place to go if you're looking for money, and we have considerable concerns about that. Based on a meeting of our board of directors just a few days ago, I've been directed to make a specific suggestion for an amendment to this bill. The first 25,000 board feet harvested by each harvester in a calendar year is currently exempt from the harvest tax. And the reason that exemption was put into place initially is because when the rates were so low, it costs more to collect that small amount of tax than the revenue would be generated from it. However, with the vastly increased rate, over 10 times, 29 cents to over $3, that exemption now, if it was deleted, would generate significant dollars, about $750,000 a biennium, I believe. So our suggestion would be, in order to get that additional revenue in and be able to reduce somewhat the overall rates eventually, that this exemption be deleted. There was a bill introduced last session that would have done exactly that. It combined a new harvest tax for service forestry with a deletion of the 25,000 board foot exemption. That got caught up in the salmon plan politics and the big temporary increase in the harvest tax. Well, that didn't pass, but that was before the session 2 years ago at the outset. So that would be our suggestion on that part of the bill. On the other part of the bill, the funding of the administration of the Western Oregon Small Tract Option Tax Program, as Mr. Yates indicated, for 30 years, those administrative costs were paid from the general fund. And it was a reaction to Measure 5 that changed that. And it's been continued each biennium since then. I think we would share the concerns expressed to you by Associated Oregon Counties about the propriety, I guess, of using a property tax, local government resource or revenue for the administration of a state-run program. And basically would concur with Mr. Rydell's sentiments on that point. Thank you.
Any questions?
You have the bill with you, Ray?
Yes, sir.
Page 2, line 12, what you're proposing as an amendment would be to delete that subsection 6.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I just put the committee for this.
All
right. One other thing, Madam Chair, that I forgot about. As I said, our board did discuss this, and they had their own reasons, but I think just in terms of setting the rates for the next budget cycle, if the committee was agreeable to eliminate the 25,000 board foot exemption, if that elimination could be delayed for 2 years, that would be to make it administratively easier to adjust the rates during the next budget cycle. So we're not suggesting you do it immediately, but do it 2 years from now.
Mr. Lemmer, for some reason I'm wanting to put a question in there. You asked to stay present at the testifying table. Did you want to add on to your testimony, or are you just...
Madam Chair and members of the committee, OFIC and the Oregon Small Woodlands Association and some other people had a meeting a couple days ago, and I just wanted to be here to answer any questions about this departure that Ray Wilkinson presented here. And we do agree with the sunset provision on the 25,000 word foot extension.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Eileen Waldorf, did I say that correctly?
I'm pretty anything anyway.
Tell me what you want, just not wait for dinner.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eileen Waldorf. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you today about House Bill 2114. I wear several hats. I am the immediate past president of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I own a small tax practice in Moala, Oregon, where I specialize in taxation of non-industrial timber landowners, and I am a third-generation forest landowner. I believe that my various hats give me a unique perspective on issues affecting family forest landowners. The bill before you today is essential legislation for thousands of small woodland owners. It sends a message to landowners in all areas of the state that the people of Oregon understand the long-term risky nature of raising timber and that our legislators understand the need for stable, consistent funding of programs necessary for our survival. The WOSTOC program, as you've heard, has been in existence since 1961, and it may be one of the most stable programs Oregon has ever seen. Those woodland owners who have participated in the program are the true cream of the crop in terms of timberland management. They feel that the ability to pay their property taxes in full on an annual basis without the requirement of paying the privilege tax when they harvest their timber has given them an enormous incentive to manage those timberlands. Not only do these family forest land owners benefit economically, but they are held to strict management requirements, which are monitored closely by the Department of Forestry. The landowner and the Department of Forestry view this program as a shining example of a win-win situation. In recent years, a sunset has been attached to the funding of WOSTOC, creating an element of uncertainty in the minds of the landowner and the Department of Forestry. Each legislative session, we've spent many hours justifying the need for WOSTOC, and although I don't mind justifying WOSTOC to anyone, I believe this sunset is counterproductive and should be removed, allowing us more time and opportunity to move on towards working on other important issues. Landowner assistance is another important tool which has been used to give the family forest land owner a boost towards managing their timberlands for the benefit of everyone in the state of Oregon. Of course, the small woodland owner benefits directly from information and technical assistance provided by the Department of Forestry, but there is little doubt that the general public and the timber industry benefit from the clean air, clean water, timber supply, recreational opportunities, etc., that our lands provide. That is why we were excited to see the shared funding responsibility between timberland owners via the 15 cents per thousand board foot harvest tax and the matching general fund dollars. I have served as a member of this landowner assistance task force for upwards of 2 years, and I can assure you that we are diligently working towards finding long-term funding mechanisms. And in reality, rather than attach the 15 cents for harvest, what we really wanted to do was tax ourselves, the landowners, a landowner assessment. But we were not able to do that because of ballot measure 5 and 50 restrictions. And it seems a little odd that we're not allowed to levy a tax on ourselves, and we are working to continue with that. We also intend to work diligently with the Department of Forestry and the Oregon Forest Industries Council in the next 2 years to come up with some form of funding programs that are beneficial to all landowners, like landowner assistance and fire funding, that will be palatable to all of us and will keep us from having to go through this process on every 2 year basis. I want to reiterate that we are concerned about the sunsetting of important tax programs to small woodland owners. Again, I think it's counterproductive, and apparently it wasn't very difficult to remove the continuation of funding for the WOSTOC program because several sessions ago the sunsetting was put in place. Our argument, I guess, is that it seems like timber taxation in the state of Oregon is changing fairly rapidly anyway. We will be doing something different in the next couple of years with funding for all forest land programs, and I think that this would send an important message to the small woodland owners of the state of Oregon that you do think that the program is important and would encourage us to continue managing our lands both for timber production and for all the other aesthetic values. I also want to point out that the WOSTOC program funding is complicated. It's not as simple as that it just comes from those landowners that are paying privilege tax. We are paying 100% of our property taxes on an annual basis to the county, and it's my understanding that with the whole complex issue of offsets, indeed our money is going to pay for other programs that we might not directly benefit from as well. So don't get caught in thinking that, and I'm sure you wouldn't, that this is a
a simple set of scenarios. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to appear before you. I am always available for questions at my office or through the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And again, I want to reiterate that personally and as a member of the Small Woodlands Association, we are committed to solving the funding problems for important tax programs. We don't think that it should take place in, as Terry Lammers has said, a hurdy-gurdy method needs to be well thought out over the next interim session. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Perfect.
No question.
You might want to pull your mic.
1997, you started a task force, and did you work right up until the session on that task force, on this issue?
Yes, we did. Actually, the goal of the task force was to define who needs services in the state, who should be providing those services, and then how those services should be funded. And unfortunately, this has been sort of like a lifelong project for myself and some other members of the Small Woodlands Association and the Department of Forestry, and where we almost always seem to stumble is in the funding. And we were working right up till the legislature, actually until the Department of Forestry had to submit its budget, hoping that we could come up with some solution. We worked with Ian Whitlock with the, Wally, help me.
What's Ian Whitlock? What's he with? Department of Justice. Just struggling with some way, again, to make sure that although there was a 50% general fund match, that we wouldn't come up against this, because we knew that the forest industry was opposed to any increase in harvest tax. And quite frankly, we're harvesting timber. We pay for harvest tax also and would like to see it greatly reduced.
There are some within this program that benefit from service forestry that do not harvest. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Representative Walsh.
The program is a benefit to those who have forest land, and they may never intend to harvest, yet we tax those who do harvest. I think that's some of the rub in this, isn't it?
Representative Walsh, Madam Chair, I guess that you have to look at the whole issue of timber taxation and benefits in a very long-term approach. Extension has many numbers that prove that our lands turn over about every 7 years. Someone who may be utilizing service forestry or landowner assistance at this point in time and saying that they don't ever intend to harvest, someone else is going to buy that land. They may have economic reasons. They may just want to harvest some timber. Eventually, those trees will be harvested if we're allowed to harvest our timber. And our argument has been that I believe strongly that everyone in the state benefits from getting those underproducing lands into production. I don't think we as a state have the luxury any longer of allowing those lands to be underproductive. And I don't know how we reach people who don't have a high level of technical expertise without some form of technical assistance. And right now, this seems to be the best way. Not the long-term system or approach, not the best way, but it's the best way for the next 2 years.
Do you have any problem eliminating the section we were talking about on the first 25,000 board feet from taxation, or including it into taxation?
Well, if I see and the Oregon Small Woodlands Association have agreed that we will look at the elimination of the 25,000 board foot exemption at the end of the next 2 years, giving us an opportunity to look for agreement, I guess, in terms of how we deal with all programs that are funded by the harvest tax. But we are agreeing to that now, provided that it happens 2 years from now and not this session of the legislature.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming in and presenting your information. It's helpful to have that.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 2114? And close the public hearing on House Bill 2114. We have one last bill posted for a public hearing, and that would be House Bill 3344. Is there anyone here who wishes to have any parting words or late-breaking updates on House Bill 3344? What we're going to do is close the revenue meeting for today, and we will reconvene on Monday. Yes, no meeting tomorrow. The chair is in.